I've seen Man vs. Wild. Or what's it called? Is that what it,
that's a show.
Man, is that Bear Grylls?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. That was Naked and Afraid is another great one. Do you ever watch that?
No, I didn't have cable for very long, and when I did, Discovery was not the channel I generally left it on. Unless they're having one of those, you know, like Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster specials.
I used to really love Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster, but I can't get into it anymore. Just because I know it's fake. So it's like there's nothing I can really enjoy about it if I know it's fake. It's like UFO shows. I stopped believing in aliens. You know, so
really?
Like I said, yeah, I did.
Oh, man, I wouldn't do that.
Why?
You know, it's like Santa, but more realistic.
Oh, geez.
There's a very good chance that life exists outside of our solar system, man. The chances are very, very high. And I'm not saying that...
No, the chances are very, very low.
No.
The Fermi paradox.
What are you talking about, man? We exist.
I know, but have you ever read up on the Fermi paradox?
Yeah, but dude, you don't think that in all of the you know, the entire universe, there has to be some sort of life out there. And maybe it's not as complex as ours. Maybe people say the same thing about us. You have no idea. And I say people. Maybe aliens say the same thing about us. There are probably aliens out there somewhere. We call them aliens. There are probably some sort of living being with advanced technology or primitive technology. There is something out there. And it may be that in the lifetime of our little spinning globe, that they never find us. And maybe they'll make it here someday, and our planet will be gone. We'll be like, nope, nothing here. On to the next one.
Right. Well, I mean, that's not... I think the whole idea behind that is that, like, it's possible that life will spring up in the infinite time that we have in this universe that has been and that will ever be.
Mm-hmm.
But the chances of two life forms showing up at the same time in the same area of this universe of ours is so small that it doesn't matter if it ever could happen, because there's the chances of two civilizations emerging at the same time, developing at the same time, you know. And then the other idea is that, like, you know, it's kind of like the way that, you know, that humans look at ants, mm-hmm. where, like, to us, like, ants are nothing. And that's because we are what we are to ants. And so anything that is able to visit us now would look at us like ants almost.
Hmm. If they're visiting us, probably. Yeah. But who knows? Maybe someday down the line, if enough of us make it through whatever it is that'll befall us all.
I always wonder what the next thing is going to be in our society. You know, like the internet was a big thing that changed the way the world is. And like I want to wake up. I don't want to wake up one day and find out aliens are real.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'd be so interesting if it did happen.
Mm.
Like it would just be like it would change religion. It would change everything. And to me, that's fascinating.
Mm.
Like just the idea. Like in Independence Day, when Will Smith wakes up in the morning and that just like over downtown LA, there's just that.
Yeah,
that spaceship just hovering. I think it was downtown LA. But it was just like so funny to me that like you could just wake up one day and like your life and the world as you know it changed. Like you have to reframe your brain.
Yeah,
and the way
District 9 was probably a better example of that, because they framed it from a more like realistic point of view with all like the, you know, the news networks talking about how the ship just arrived and then they just had to live with it, you know. And that's like a whole different thing, because there's no destruction and all.
District 9 was so excellent.
So good, man. Just let Neil Blomkamp do almost anything he wants. I think Chappie was kind of a misstep, but it was an interesting concept. I don't know why it needed Diane Antwoord.
Yeah, that's it. I guess I'd watch it, but now it seems like memeable. Like it's too much of a meme to me to actually.
You can skip it. Watch his shorts instead. His shorts are all really good. Like the old ones and the new ones. The pre-Chappie and the post-Chappie is all pretty great.
So the shorts are post-Chappie?
Well, he has some from before and after. Chappie came from one of his early shorts. He used to do like commercials for different brands and stuff, but he would also produce these short films which evolved into things like District 9 and Chappie and other projects that he's produced into full motion pictures. But since then, he's started a new studio called Oat Studio, and he's done several really, really cool, high concept, really well rendered shorts. You know, it's like, it's more or less like what you've seen with really interesting mechanics and creature design, but just short concepts that he just kind of put out there. They're very well developed, and I think the idea was basically just see, like, okay, let's put these out and let's see what people react to, and then that might inform a future feature, which is kind of what he did before. It's kind of like a back to basics sort of thing for Neil Blomkamp, or at least the people that follow him might see it as that. And yeah, they're pretty great, actually.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, you're right. District 9 is the much better version of aliens just showing up, because it wasn't like, you know, stylized us versus them. It was us versus them. I'll say it was us versus them in a way, but it wasn't like, we're here to kill you, and you know, now humans must prevail. Action movie, big battle scene.
It was an interesting take. I mean, there's the political side to it, you know, which is you know, poverty and how we treat
the metaphor,
right? There's all of that, but just the idea of that at a very, you know, high level, like aliens come here. They found us. They have the ability to travel across universes to go to all these, you know, different places, and they come here, they find us, and then they're basically stuck. They run out of gas. and as a result, they're turned into nothing, like just slum creatures that live in a fenced-in area.
I should watch that again, because I forget a lot of the plot. And like how they eventually launch it off the spaceship leaves at the end, I think, right? Yeah. It doesn't, I mean, knowing that, it doesn't negate like seeing the rest of the movie. It's certainly an experience. And they do a fair bit of action sequence. Like there is a big dramatic action sequence at the end of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's not like, you know, explosions, Will Smith, Randy Quaid, that whole thing.
No speeches, no big speeches, really.
No, definitely soft spoken as far as characters go.
But yeah, no, those are great. But that's what I'm saying, man. Maybe they're not going to look like that. Maybe they'll never make it here, but I wouldn't say that there are no aliens. I'm with you on the Loch Ness Monster thing, and that hurts me to say, because growing up, I spent a lot of time reading fantasy books and all of that, but also books that I considered nonfiction.
Yes.
Which were based around Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and, you know, the Time Life series of Mysteries of the Unexplained. That was like one of my all-time favorite books. And then there was the related series that had a bunch of other things. And man, I dug into those hardcore.
And Unsolved Mysteries are so fun.
Yeah.
Not even just that, like the Hindenburg, like learning about the Hindenburg was really fascinating for some reason. Titanic, I was just enamored with learning about that. It's like weird fandom for historical events.
Anomalies. I'd call them like anomalies, because they're historical, but they're very strange. They stand out because they're one of a kind in some way. You know, they're the worst of whatever that category is. So of course they're going to be like the most interesting.
I just remember in third grade where my teacher was just blown away by my class's interest in the Titanic. He's like, oh my God, you guys love this. And this is like, the movie hadn't come out yet, I don't think. So it wasn't that was making everybody flip out. But it's like, we were just flipping out because it was just such a crazy thing. It was like science fiction almost, even though there's no like fantasy about it. That's just a horrible tragedy that happened in the most bizarre way, like a ship hitting an iceberg and it takes 3.5 hours to sink, and it breaks in the middle, and both halves of the ship float to crazy parts of it. And like I had like interactive discs, like for like I had CDs, CD-ROMs on Titanic, and I would go to see Titanica, which was that Omni Theater IMAX film that came out in the 90s. It was so good. But it was about when they made those submarines, like JJ and Alvin, that went down underwater. It was like the first time they ever got a submersible down there to the Titanic. And they had the big submarine that people were in, and then they had the little remote control that they actually just would steer through the remains of the ship and like recreate pictures that took place there, and open safes just like the movie, you know, like, but it was real life. Like, that's all based on real life, what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Minus the Bill Paxton. He was in that, right? Titanic?
Man, I don't know. May and I were talking about that today. Like, she's like, have you seen it? And I said, yes and no. Like, I definitely saw it as a kid when I was much, much younger, but I don't really remember it. I mean, it was very long and probably wasn't that interesting to a kid in middle school, really. Like, at least not like my age. I wasn't into that at all. It probably just seemed like a romance movie to me. And May tells me that the romance is like 5 to 10 minutes of the whole movie or something, but
I don't know. It's way more than that. Yeah. It's way, way more than that. They do a lot in that movie. Like, there's a lot of moving pieces going around, but like, the romance is the central focus, I would say. Yeah. And that's what would all the girls, like, I knew a girl in middle school that would go, she went like 9 times in theaters to see Titanic.
That's a lot of time in a theater seat.
That's 27 hours. Like, she's like, I've seen it 9 times. I'm like, what the? It was like, wow. Leonardo DiCaprio was like, yeah, sure. They were like, you know, heartthrob at the time. And it's like, you just, you know, you didn't have YouTube to watch clips. You didn't have, like, it would take like 6 months for it to come out on video, on VHS, not even a DVD.
Way overproduced as well. That VHS.
Yeah.
the two VHS set that now lines every single rack of
the movie.
Goodwill.
Just stops halfway. It just stops halfway through the film, and you're just like, okay, I gotta get up and change the cassette tape.
Well, it's a good reminder to go to the bathroom and maybe feed yourself.
Yeah, it's a very old school intermission, which I liked. Like, I saw Hateful Eight in theaters, and I saw it on 35mm,
and
there was an overture in the beginning and an intermission in the middle. It was like very enjoyable as far as films go.
He had all kinds of rules about how that was supposed to be shown too, right?
In those situations, like, the Roadhouse version of the show was that, but there's plenty of normal screenings where you just go in and sit there for the 2.5-3 hours or whatever it was without intermission.
Yeah. I thought that movie was a waste of time when I saw it.
Really?
Yeah.
I
don't know. Like, I don't know what I was expecting, I guess. And maybe it's well done. I mean, the conceit of it is that it's, you know, it plays out like a play, right? And it's kind of cool from that point of view. Like, the fact that most of it just happens in this cabin, it's kind of like, it is kind of crazy. But I don't know. I don't think I really get Quentin Tarantino quite as much as some people do. Like, Django was good and Glorious Bastards was fine, but I've never seen one of his movies and thought, this is one of my all-time favorite movies.
I think it, for me, like, I recognize the problematic nature of Tarantino films, but I don't necessarily, but I really enjoy them at the same time. Like, it's like a bad action movie, but it's not a bad action movie. It's like, I can't fanboy over it because I'm not like a huge Tarantino aficionado, and like, I don't rewatch his movies. I don't rewatch any movies, but especially not his. But I do recognize that just like, the way he films and the way he writes and the actors and the performances that he secures, you know, just, it's unlike anything else. And it's one of the few like directors that I can like just draw will drop at the tension that they can create in a scene, like Inglourious Basterds opening scene out of control. Like, it's fantasy. It's like taking real life situations and turning them into fantasy is history becomes stranger than fiction, I guess. I don't know. It's so fun to watch sometimes. I don't know. And so like in Hateful Eight was just most the beginning of that takes place in a stagecoach, right? Like, I think the first, like, hour is in a stagecoach or something, just them talking.
Yeah, it's very long stretches and very limited number of scenes.
Yeah, and then the rest of it is in that little cabin. And all these weird time frames and people popping up here and there. It's just, it's very well thought out. And then there's that whole thing where Kurt Russell breaks the guitar. That's really good.
Yeah. there are moments. I think I was probably just tired. I don't know. I just got like kind of bored with it, and it never drew me back in.
Yeah, I mean, if the dialogue isn't really catching your ear, and you're not like laughing or like into these characters, then I can see how it can get boring really fast. I mean, nothing happens. There's just like, there's action, there's blood and guts, but like, there's no movement in the movie.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a fan of dialogue. I'll watch anything that Aaron Sorkin writes, but I don't know, something has to hook me. And if the scene isn't grabbing me, then it's not grabbing me, but that's okay. Like, Quentin Tarantino movies are really great for a lot of people. Give me anything Guillermo del Toro makes. I'll watch his stuff instead. Everybody can choose whatever they want.
Villeneuve. How do you say his name? Denis Villeneuve?
No idea, but yes, I'm looking forward to Dune.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
Dude.
Ugh. He did. Well, like Blade Runner was fantastic. Before that was Arrival, right?
Mm.
He's just so talented. Somebody else did. Shit, what's the name? Padme Amidala was in it. He did Ex Machina. Fuck, what's the name of the movie he did?
You looking for the director?
Name of the movie he did with Natalie Portman. Ex Machina.
Annihilation?
Direct. Yes, Annihilation.
Yeah. Like, just that was it. That was Alex Garland who directed that. Wasn't it?
He did Ex Machina, right? Yeah, and that's just another director, like just good science fiction. I know it's not Quentin Tarantino, but woof, just some good stuff.
We got. Oh, we don't have to. I was thinking, you know, we watched those two Alien shorts recently, the first two that came out, and they've continued to come out over the last couple weeks. I think I want to talk about the rest of them, but I think we should wait until they're all out. I want to talk about the rest of them.
Well, we should wait till I see them. That's probably my biggest concern.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I put them on the docket for tonight, and I thought about assigning it to you, but I don't know. Like, we could do this.
Now's not a good time.
Of course, you got a lot going on. But apart from that, like, we could do this every week, every 2 weeks, but I don't know. At this point, at the rate that they're coming out and the quality that they seem to, like the bar that they seem to hover around, I think it's probably just best to talk about them at the end and maybe talk about our favorites.
I'd be up for two in like next week. Like I can take it for next week. Like I'll take the assignment.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll keep adding them to the list and everything, but we're getting closer and closer to actual Alien Day. And
what is that when the 4K thing happens or what is that?
It's like 4/26.
Why is it 4/26?
Is LV 4/26?
Oh, okay. Why is that? That's stupid.
I know, but it's the 40th anniversary and they do Alien Day every year and they always do different stuff. And this is like the big thing this year, I think. But I did sign up for a contest to hopefully win some cool swag. They had like a life-size Xenomorph bust that you could win.
No idea where I'd hang it, but
it's pretty cool. It's by NECA, who made the same... this is the same company that created that life-size replica of the alien egg that I really want. No idea where I'd put it, but entered a contest to win that. And then they did a sneaker. And they're sick. I'm not a basketball shoe guy, but they're really cool. Let me send you a picture of this.
I think I'm looking at them right now. They have the Ripley ones, and they have... Oh, the Reeboks.
Alien Stomper Reeboks.
Ooh.
Aren't these cool?
They look wet, just like an alien. The Ripley ones are kind of cool too. I could see they're like very retro looking.
Mm. Yeah, I like these a lot. I could win a pair of those too in that contest, but we'll see. I don't know if there's anything else to say on Alien right now. It doesn't really look like there's not like a ton going on. Looks like maybe some new comics and stuff, but that's the world of Alien at the moment. I'm hoping that they have something like cool, some kind of surprise, maybe on Alien Day this year, but we'll see.
Maybe like a trailer for a new movie. Is that what you're thinking?
No, there's no
production. Yeah. They couldn't hide production like that.
I follow like the Alien blogs fairly closely just to check in to see on any movement in the Ridley Scott camp, but nothing right now.
That's good.
Oh, go on. In other science fiction news, me and you have recorded like two episodes of Bantha Fodder.
Yes.
which is crazy.
The second one is being edited. It's been a busy week.
Ain't no rush.
Yeah,
I know. Just put one out.
Yeah, we have another 6 months if we want to keep our average going.
We're doing good. I'm surprised. The one that we just did was kind of a trailer reaction, impromptu. We didn't plan on recording that, but we did, and then we ended up recording another one, which is cool. I'm excited to see how that one comes out. The concept is neat, and I'm looking forward to your production on it and seeing how it all comes together. But next week, I'm recording an episode of Bantha Fodder without you, which is really weird.
A podcasm?
No, Bantha Fodder.
A Bantha Fodder. Wait, what?
Yeah, I told you. You told me just go on and do it without me because you're not going to be around.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So,
oh, my God.
So you're going to be gone. You're going to be traveling. And I found a guy who went and did the Void experience, the Secrets of the Empire Void experience, which is like this really cool VR thing. You know, this company called the Void, they have these shops all over the western half of the United States. And you go in and it's basically like it's like laser tag almost, except it's a narrative experience in VR.
Mm-hmm.
And story driven, looks really cool. And I've been dying to hear about it. I think they might have had like an intro event in New York, like a temporary kind of thing at one time when it first came out. Mm-hmm. I think I asked if you were going to go and you didn't go.
No, I didn't.
And then, so now the only place you can do it is basically in LA, Las Vegas, or a couple places in Canada. Looks like they're trying.
Canada?
Yeah, like they have a one in Alberta somewhere. I don't know. They're expanding. I think there's one coming to Philadelphia soon, maybe New York. But in the meantime, I found somebody that's actually done it, and they're like audio savvy and into nerd culture. And I'm like, hey, that sounds like a cool episode, and you're going to be out of town. So I'll be doing an interview for Bantha Fodder without you, which is very, very strange. We'll have to find a way to pull you into it somehow. I actually have some ideas.
I totally thought that you were recording podcasts and for some reason in my head, like,
no.
That's how far out of touch I am from Bantha Fodder.
Well, we
recording.
Had a conversation about that too, because with all the stuff
we
that
did.
You have going on, I wasn't sure like what you wanted to do. And I'm not really in the idea of replacing you on any episodes of Podcasm, because that's not really what the show is about. Bantha Fodder, you've done recordings without me before. You did
Jared's episode.
Yeah, you did Jared's episode. And I was brought into that too, which is why I have to get creative on my end and figure out how to make you a part. But yeah, Podcasm, I didn't like see any way to really do that without you. So no, Bantha Fodder, I'm gonna try it, see how it goes. I've never talked to this person ever. It's like somebody that I know basically through Twitter. They sold me something years ago, and we used Twitter as a way to communicate. And I just kept following them because they were funny and they made nerd jokes. And yeah, they're pretty cool. I had no idea that they had like a degree in audio engineering. So,
oh, cool.
I think it's actually going to sound good.
Yeah,
in comparison
nice.
To like our other interviews in the past.
You're gonna start the interview and it's gonna be on a Yeti. It's just gonna sound like our first episode of Bantha Fodder.
No, they're good musicians too, so that I've heard samples of their work and it all sounds great, which will be a relief to you. I can edit that one too, so you don't have to worry about that.
Well, whatever, you know, whatever you decide on for a creative direction, I'm open to it.
Yeah.
But you've had a creative direction over other podcasts recently. The Breaking Ground finally hit the shelves, so to speak.
The digital shelves. Yeah. Breaking Ground is out, which is my new podcast, which is weird to say because I haven't really been thinking about it as my podcast. I am the host. I am the producer.
It sounds like your podcast.
I know, but I haven't thought about it like that because it is a podcast for Breaker, the company that I work for. And it's sort of, it's my project, but I've never really seen it as my podcast because every podcast I've ever done, any creative endeavor I've ever undertaken, with only a few exceptions, they've all been for my existing audience. And that's not to say that they haven't outgrown that. You know, the people that listen to Bantha Fodder are probably not all the same people that listened to the first episode of Bantha Fodder who follow either you or I on Twitter, right? So these things grow, mm-hmm. but they all start with my own audience in mind, like me relying on the people that follow me to check it out, maybe enjoy it, share it with their friends, to grow it organically in that way. With Breaking Ground, though, I'm working with an entirely different base audience. And, you know, I have some friends that like checked it out and they shared it, and that's really nice. But it's probably the most successful podcast I've ever had. And I only have two episodes out, and one is a trailer.
like download numbers, you mean, successful? Like,
it hasn't reached the like the all-time numbers of either of our shows, but it's not going to take long.
Well, it's two episodes.
For that to happen.
Yeah.
I'd say it'll take less than a quarter of the time to hit that number. The numbers that I've been tracking have been rather impressive, which I kind of expected. I mean, Breaker isn't, we're a small company and we're fairly new, and our active user count is probably much lower than a lot of the other, you know, podcast apps that we're competing against, but it's still a very big audience and it's a very dedicated community.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm basically hosting this show for this community of people that I don't know, which is really interesting. I come at it from a very different perspective, and I'm producing it with you know, different intentions and different things in mind than I would for a show that you and I work on, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can kind of like break out of my comfort zone and try new things and see how it works. And so far it's worked pretty great. Like the reception that I've got personally has been fantastic. I've had some people reach out that it's really surprised me. Like Justin Jackson, who is one of the co-owners and founders of Transistor, the company that we used to host this show. He listened to it and he listened to the trailer and he liked it. He liked it enough to pull a quote of something that I said on that trailer episode and share it with the Transistor audience on like all of their platforms and on his own personal feed, which I thought was, you know, super nice. But also, as a fan of his, somebody that's followed him for a long time, I was humbled by it. I think Justin has this knack for finding really great quotes from people. It's something that I noticed early on in his show, like Mega Maker, Product People. He's had a lot of shows over the years, and one of the through lines for all of these is that he's able to, you know, read things, listen to things, digest them, and pull out the tidbits that are really like the most impactful, the thesis statements for things, as it were. And he's able to bring those out and sometimes reutilize them. He'll reference things in his blog posts. He'll take snippets from other podcasts and pull it into his own to illustrate the point. Because rather than paraphrase what somebody else has said, he just figures, well, I've already found somebody who says this better than I ever will, so let's just, you know, credit them and all that. And so when he pulled a quote from my intro episode, my trailer episode, just kind of talking about how, you know, I plan to go about the show and not just talking about the easy stuff and all the wins, but talk about the hard things that we have to deal with as we're building this app. Somehow that resonated with him enough to pull a quote. And, you know, he hasn't like reused it in one of his podcasts. He hasn't used it in a blog post, but it was enough for him to actually like not just share something that one of his customers was, you know, promoting, but to actually listen to it and take something from it and share that with his audience. I thought that was like a really nice thing for him to do, and I felt really good about that. So I'm coming to terms with exactly what this project is as it pertains to me and my work, because I just, you know, I kind of have been looking at this up to this point as like a cool, you know, semi-creative project for my job. You know, it's another way for me to rack up some hours and get paid. Like it is just a job when you boil it down, but I am the host and I am the person that's like putting this thing together. Like a lot of creativity does go into it. It isn't really all that much different than any of the other shows or writing projects that I've done in the past. So I'm now getting back into the swing of doing interviews and editing interviews in a way that, you know, cuts out the cruft and drives the point home. So it's weird. It's a very, very strange thing that I've kind of backed my way into. I didn't think that I'd be doing a project like this again. And so far people have really taken to it, which is surprising because I didn't think that the audio for the first couple episodes were really all that great. but people have told me that it sounds really good. I'm like, that's amazing. You should hear the first draft. but I think that probably boils down to the fact that I have really high standards And that's probably your fault.
Sorry.
But I'm glad that people are enjoying it. I'm excited to see it progress and to see what we're able to do with it and the things that we talk about and how we're able to kind of work through all the stuff that we kind of work on in the background. It is an interesting concept for a show, and it's maybe not all that different from other company podcasts, but I think for a community like this, where everybody is so invested in this baby app and watching it grow, it's kind of a cool behind the scenes look that, and I hate saying behind the scenes, but it's the only way you can describe something like this. You know, like when somebody says behind the scenes, you're like, oh, cool. Like that's just a word that you can use to sell special features on a DVD. But, if you are interested in the product and you want to hear about how it's made, like this is a good way to do it. So yeah, so far so good.
Isn't it great? Like, cause I feel like you feel like you're screaming into the void for so long with these podcasts and like with Podcasm and even Bantha Fodder to an extent, like when you get engagement really from your work and like when you can see like, just like, you know, Breaking Ground is just, it's blooming, you know, like, and in a big way, and it's your baby, you know, it's just cool for you, like to have that kind of feedback and seeing other people take what you're doing.
Yeah. It's daunting though.
It's validation in a way.
Yeah. You know? No, it definitely is, but it is daunting. Because it is a much bigger audience. I'm not used to an audience like this. And this could mean a lot of different things. For example, okay, so today I recorded an episode with Leah. I was supposed to have Emma on as well, but she went to New York and she got sick. So that sucks. But me and her were talking after the show was over and she was mentioning like different people that she thought might be interesting to have on the show, such as their investors. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? Does that mean you want me to interview, you know, people in venture capital? I know absolutely nothing about that. And I don't want to pull our investors into the show and ask them a bunch of basic questions about how that works. Because, I mean, maybe that'd be interesting for the people listening, but I don't think that's like a good use of their time. And probably isn't, I don't know, like maybe that is interesting, but it's kind of daunting because that's not me talking to a musician or a publicist or a developer, like somebody that I can in some way relate to. I have absolutely no clue what goes on in that world. And maybe that would make for a good interview, but I usually like to do prep and I like to have some kind of common ground. And it's hard to find that professionally with somebody who does something so out of my wheelhouse. So that's kind of a daunting thing. And then the audience itself, it's big and I don't know who I'm talking to. It's, you know, if I look at our Twitter followers on Twitter, we have like 16 followers. And if you remove all of the accounts that belong to you and I, I can probably name every single one of those people without looking. It's a very small audience, which is fine. Like, it's not like we really use our Twitter for anything but promoting the show, which is silly because anybody who's following us on Twitter has us downloaded to their podcast app of choice automatically, probably. But the smaller audience. So I don't know who I'm talking to with Breaking Ground, which is interesting, but I'm hoping I can kind of leverage that into something new, something that we're not able to do so much on this show. You know, on Bantha Fodder for a long time, we would promote our email address saying, hey, if you have questions or if you have ideas for topics, send us something. We have never got a single email.
30 episodes, 3 years later.
Never a single email. We've never received anything to banthafodderfm@gmail.com. I'm almost positive that's true. If it's anything,
our
it's
welcome
like,
email is still the same exact. It's like just the only thing.
Yeah, that or maybe like if I ever used it to sign up for like maybe our Instagram account. I don't know. I don't even use it for like our Twitter or any hosting that we've ever had. So that's not something that we can really use. But in this show, I have, you know, I have an email address that people can email. I've mentioned a couple times in the show so far that if you know, a lot of these episodes aren't out yet, so I'm not like sifting through a bunch of emails as it is. But I've told them, like, if you are comfortable with having your voice on the show, feel free to send me a voice memo. That would give me like an extra something to put into the episode, a little, you know, like a little extra production pizzazz. And it's better than me just reading off somebody's email. It's cooler when you can like hear like a caller or something. So it's possible that something like that will come along. We also have comments on Breaker, so people can leave questions pertaining to the exact thing that's being talked about in the episode that they're listening to. So if we're talking about something and we maybe gloss over something that would be interesting to our audience, somebody can comment at the exact timestamp and I can go listen to what they were listening to when they asked that question. And then we can follow up on that in a future episode. There are so many more possibilities for a show like this because of the feedback loop that we're able to generate through our app and through our email. And I think the chances of getting feedback are probably still low. Maybe there aren't going to be like a ton of questions or anything, but the chances are definitely higher than any show that you and I have done so far, at least on our own. Good One's a different thing, but you're also, I don't think you guys take callers.
Congrats, man.
Yeah, thanks.
It's exciting. Like, we're just expanding out. And especially in a, like, you're working at a, like, your Breaker is a rad app.
Yeah.
And anybody who's interested in podcasting apps who, you know, like, there's never been a podcasting app that is interactive. Like, sure, there's the review section on the Apple one. It's mostly just fans writing in when their hosts tell them to. But, like, the idea of Breaker just being so interactive with the comments, like, I mean, there's people that interact on our podcast that have interacted on our podcast episodes that are just like, they actually, it shows that they're listening. It's more than like, no, like, we're not telling people to review, but it allows you to like, not just gush because someone told you to, it allows you to be like, say, oh, I connected with this part of the podcast, you know, you can like see which episodes are doing better than others as far as engagement goes, like download numbers are one thing.
We have a popular sort. So you can sort by popular episodes and pick out interesting ones, which is cool if you're trying to get into a new show, but it's also interesting from a podcaster's point of view because you can see, okay, this one has three likes. Why does this one resonate with the people that listen to our show more than others? It's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea that it allows you to, like, it's just such a better way. It's like such a better metric to see likes on a podcast episode than it is to just have to look at your download numbers.
Yeah.
Because if you see a like, you know they listen to it.
That's right. Well, potentially. I mean, they could just be nice. I mean, I could technically go in to see if they listen to something. And if you wanted to check somebody individually to see if they listen to an episode of Breaker as long as they're, you know, you're following them or their profile is public, you can go and you can see what they listen to, which is another cool part of the app. But no, you're right. Like, likes are a better indicator of quality content rather than downloads, because a lot of people will subscribe to something, and I'm a good example of this. I subscribe to a couple shows, probably, you know, Marin is a good example of this. I subscribe to Marin. I don't listen to every episode of Marin, but my phone automatically downloads everything that comes into my subscriptions. So he's getting a download from me every single time he puts out an episode, but that doesn't mean I listen to it.
Yeah, you are contributing to his advertising money. The fact that you are subscribed is the reason why he can make what he can make from ads. Which is
partially.
Which then in turn, I mean, a little bit.
Well, there's CPMs too. Like people have to be buying the product. It's not just
right.
Oh, you got this many listeners. Here's a reward.
But with him, but with Marin's numbers, I think we talked about this on the last episode, didn't we?
Yeah.
Did we mention Marin's numbers? Yeah. Like, I mean, with a million listeners, 1,000, you know, coupon redeemings, like, they're like, yeah, we'll take it. Like, even it's like a 1%. Yeah, no, that's cool. What else? Oh, I mean, like, I mean, if we really want to get into it, I really wanted to open tonight with some like Luminary talk, because Luminary is live.
Oh, it is live. Did you downloaded it, right?
Negative, sir. I did
you
not.
You didn't. Okay, so I did, but I download every single podcast app that is available on iOS.
You just want to try it. How's the interface? Let's start with the basics.
You know, I actually deleted it.
You didn't even open it?
No, I opened it and I like put some fake info in to create an account, and then I checked it out. I was like, this is embarrassing, and I deleted it.
embarrassing for who?
For Luminary.
Oh, I thought it was like embarrassing. Like, this is embarrassing that I'm using this app.
Well,
for
that
me.
Too. Like, I didn't want to like keep it on my device. I have no idea what they're, you know, doing. That's why I didn't want to give them any of my data and everything. They just seem kind of nasty. And like, there are plenty of examples as to why this is. And so yeah, I downloaded Luminary day one when they launched. I signed up for their beta months
let's
ago.
Let's pause for a second and let's just tell any listeners what Luminary is. I feel like, because we just kind of started in on Luminary, if you're not familiar,
we touched on this with the Love and Radio, but go ahead and explain what the platform is.
It's just for anybody listening to a podcast, you to this show, you understand what a podcast is because you're listening to it. It's just a Netflix for podcasts is what they're billing it as, which is not a thing. So nobody's
asking for this.
Yeah, nobody's asking for this. It's a paywall for podcasts. And for in our case, it's a podcast that we really like. Love and Radio is one of the many that have jumped behind the paywall. And so that's what we're just referring to here. It's that Luminary is this company that has emerged with talent such as Lena Dunham and
Russell Brand,
Hannibal Buress, who is a great comedian. I love Hannibal.
Trevor Noah.
Yeah, like just, I mean, big names, but yeah. Like, I mean, there's lots of other podcasts in the sea, you guys. Okay, so you were saying.
Yeah, okay, so I just downloaded it again just so I can kind of look through it as I go. When you open it up, there are three tabs. And the first tab is like a home tab. It's pretty similar to most home tabs that you'll find in a lot of apps. You know, Breaker is no different here. There's a search tab, and then there's a My Shows tab. When I searched for like our shows, I usually just search my name since I'm in the metadata for all of them. I did a search, and the first thing that caught my eye is that throughout the entire app, like, they have nice featured banners, which are, you know, rectangular at like a 4:3 ratio or whatever. All of the podcast artwork is, most of it is square. Some of them are in circles for some reason. but when you do the search, they're all rectangular at a really nasty aspect ratio that completely ruins the effect. Like, it just looks gross. I'm going to send this to you right now because it looks so amateurish, and it reminds me of like four other podcast apps that I have on my phone that look awful, and they're, you know, really cheaply made. It's just bad. It like cuts off text because it's cropped at the top and the bottom. It's centered, but it's not square.
Oh,
and
yucky.
It's not far off from being square. There's no reason for these to be truncated in the way that they are, to be cropped so terribly. But that's the way it is. So yeah, that kind of put me off right away. And then, you know, opening up one of the shows, it's pretty simple. You can, you know, you can rate it. You can rate at a show level. So you can like thumbs up or thumbs down. You can add it to your shows, which basically, I guess, is like a subscription, gives you some sorting options. It's a super, super basic app, but it doesn't give like a link to your podcast anywhere, like your website or anything. Your show notes are a disaster. Like, they don't have, it has all of the text, but there are no hyperlinks.
Do the chapters work?
I haven't tested that. I don't know.
I'd be curious to know how that looks.
I will look using our most recent episode of Bantha Fodder. But yeah, it's just, it's like, it's super bare bones. It's not a really great app, which, you know, it makes me think, okay, they're putting a lot on those exclusive shows, which are not podcasts. If it's behind a paywall, they're not podcasts. And we were talking about this in like our chat app with Deanna. The thing about these shows is like, maybe you're interested in one of the shows that they have. She was talking about one of the shows from The Ringer. You and I like Love and Radio. Like, if these were free shows, we'd probably listen to them, right? Ad-supported shows on RSS, we'd probably listen to them. But I kind of look at it like this. Let's use The Ringer show as an example. It's called, like, The Rewatchables. or something. Yeah. It's like a spinoff of a show that they have for free everywhere else, except they're just watching the movies from the year 1999.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, fine. Okay. But let's just say I was interested in that. Is it worth paying the $8 a month to join and just listen to the show? No. And Luminary's argument to that is, well, we have all these other shows that you'll like to listen to as well. Well, I don't need any other shows. I have plenty of shows. I have a hard time listening to the ones that are free and I want to listen to. Like, we only have so much time. So it's really, to me, it's no different than the show not existing at all. Like, who's going to listen to this? If the show didn't exist, or if the show exists behind a paywall that I have no intention of breaching, it's the same thing. There's no difference between those two scenarios for somebody like me that has no need for more content. Like, there doesn't need to be a Netflix or podcast. So that's like the main problem with Luminary. That's the thing that everybody was like already bummed about when they announced, like, before they launched, they're talking about all these exclusive quote podcasts and also the ability to listen to everything else that you want. But then they launched and it turns out that even the second part of that wasn't even true. Because they're missing a bunch of shows that are freely available everywhere else, because which is absurd.
Well, that's the news that I was interested in talking about this week, like with their launch. You know, like the biggest thing was that, like, I mean, a big headline was that the Daily, New York Times, the Daily show with Michael Barbaro, is not on Luminary for whatever reason, because they're not allowing Luminary to broadcast that.
And a bunch of BBC shows and a bunch of Gimlet shows.
Yeah, and how are they preventing their shows from syncing?
They're not. They just basically opt out. They basically like serve a notice to Luminary, and Luminary has no choice but to, like, I guess, remove them. Like, they're still listed there, but they have this really weird text in like the description saying the show's not available. And didn't you send me this? And you sent me a screenshot of that, and you had some thoughts on that were kind of funny.
Where they were just saying that it's not they're putting it on the Daily.
Yeah, well, they put some kind of description on the show where the normal show description, like, would be, but the way that they were spinning it,
they're like, podcasts are broadcast through a free, like, through RSRs. Like, the Daily is choosing not to use RSS to distribute their feed through us. So we're working every day. But while you're not able to receive the Daily, here's some other shows that we recommend. And they recommended some other Daily type news programs, which was just so stupid.
Yeah, this publisher has chosen not to take advantage of this free distribution, meaning RSS. So Well, we'll continue working to bring the Daily to the Luminary service soon, but in the meantime, try NPR's Up First or Vox's Today Explained. Okay, so this is so shitty because, like, I understand why people don't want their shows on Luminary. I'm, like, half tempted to pull our shows, too, for several reasons. But, like, I get it, but also, if you're gonna give out a show over RSS... I don't really get what gives you the right to say you can't display this in your app. Like, as long as they're not doing anything nefarious to the audio. And that's something I want to talk about with you after we get through the whole, like, shows not being available mess, because there's new controversy with Luminary that came out today.
The one that Marco was talking about.
Yeah. But so that's the thing I don't get. Like, Gimlet, Spotify, you know, these bigger publishers who put out this content that is ad supported but is freely available to anybody that has an RSS feed, doesn't even have to be a podcast app. You could just download it from the RSS feed. You can go to the website and you can download it for free. You can listen to it wherever you want, however you like to. That's the point of RSS. So with Luminary, I guess they're just ticked off because they're trying to, like, sequester stuff, and they don't want, maybe Spotify doesn't want the competition. Maybe, you know, the New York Times is against the idea of the paywall thing with this kind of content. I don't know. It's weird. I don't fully understand the decisions that are being made there, but it's funny to watch because I don't want luminaries to succeed, but I figured that their downfall would be that they don't have enough people on their platform to listen to the shows that they're paying a ton of money to produce. And I thought that would be it.
I think with the Gimlet shows, it's more about Spotify wanting premium content, their premium users to only benefit. Like if somebody's paying to listen to Gimlet shows or whatever, you know, it's gonna be through Spotify.
Yeah, but when they bought Gimlet, one of their big things was, we are going to be using Gimlet to produce Spotify exclusive shows, but all of these other shows that have already been distributed over RSS, that's not going to be changing. So what they're doing here is specifically for Luminary going back on that promise, which is hilarious. Right.
Yeah. It's very much like seeing the school bully get beat up, you know, or seeing like, well, maybe I don't, is Luminary the bully? I don't know.
I don't know.
If that's a sound metaphor, but
everything they're doing is nasty. So I'm not like a fan of what they're doing. And again, I feel like I need to say this every time we talk about this. My thoughts are my own. They do not reflect Breaker or anybody else at Breaker. I haven't actually talked about Luminary with anybody else at Breaker, really, so I don't know what everybody else's thoughts are there, and it's not my place to say. These are my thoughts alone. I think it's a nasty business. I don't think anybody wants this. I don't think any like customers, any podcast listeners want this. I think the fact that every single one of Luminary's tweets get ratioed is a pretty good indication that their service is not necessarily welcomed by the hardcore podcast listeners. And I don't see, actually, I did a survey the other day. Let me look up the the results of the survey so far. I did a Twitter poll, which is still running, and it might for
I voted in it.
Did you? Yeah, you might have been like one of 10.
No, it was like 17 or 18 when I looked at it.
Okay, yeah, so there's like 17 votes, 3 days left. I asked, you know, just like anybody who listens to podcasts, where are you on Luminary right now? What's your vibe? And my options were, I'm a paying user, I'm trying out the free tier, I'm not interested, or what is Luminary? I have 17 votes, and so far, 18% of people say they are a paying user, which I think is interesting. That went up rapidly since yesterday. One person is trying out the free tier, it looks like. And then 41% say not interested, 35% say what is Luminary. Like, the passive people don't seem to care about it. And maybe there's like one or two active people that are going to try it out because they want to try one show, but is that going to be enough? Like, is the app good enough to be their only podcast app, or are they going to be switching between two different podcast apps? And like, that's not fun to do. I did that for a while when I started at Breaker. I was still using Overcast and I was working on switching, and that's just a pain. Like, I didn't know what to listen to where, and I was always forgetting what subscriptions I had where. I don't know. I don't think the app is good. I don't think anybody really wants the content to be locked down the way that it is. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it's going to be super advantageous for the people producing that content. I don't know. Where are you at on this? Like, have you?
I don't know.
You
I think that it's it. Just no. I just I am still upset about Love and Radio.
Yeah.
And I just don't want to even think about it. I want to pretend it doesn't exist, basically. Mm. But my thing about it is that it's just like all these podcast producers could just go to Patreon.
Yeah.
Like, the Patreon model is so good for successful podcasters.
Mm-hmm.
I use We Hate Movies as the example all the time, but like, those guys launched a Patreon 3 years ago or so, and they're like, they're working on giving up their full-time jobs because it's so successful.
Yeah.
You know, like, and if they were to jump behind Luminary, like, I guess maybe that the allure is that like Luminary is giving these people the ability to have a full-time income on a podcasting job. Maybe that's what Luminary is promising these people to start.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why like Nick Van Der Kolk with Love and Radio, maybe he's like, oh, well, I can just make the show and not have to worry about securing advertisers.
Yeah.
Cause like, I mean, the way Nick puts it on his Twitter is like, it was either this or no show at all, which I think is a cop out fully, because what were the last six seasons? Was like, was Radiotopia really squashing Love and Radio? Is he in dire straits with and like couldn't fund himself? Like, is like, if that's the case, then like, why not launch a Patreon? You know, like, which is, I guess, is more work. So maybe it depends on the show you're doing. But like the Rewatchables example you gave earlier is an amazing example of something that would have just thrived on Patreon. There's tons of listeners for the Rewatchables. And to just be like, well, we're going to start a separate feed for just the movies from 1999. And we're going to do that with a bunch of other ones. So if you want to pay $5 a month, or like you can pay $1 a month for this tier and you'll get this month. If you'll get the entire 1990s series for $10 a month, like that's what We Hate Movies does. They have the Nexus, which is just a Star Trek show. Mm-hmm. They have the Gleep Glossary, which I've sent you a couple times, but they just, it's just one of the hosts of We Hate Movies, just reading through, just the Star Wars character guide, essentially.
Yeah.
It just, and the other three hosts just making fun of him as he's reading it, which is just great. They've done some of our favorites, including Hammerhead and including Dr. Evasan.
Yeah.
They're like, if you want to pay $5 a month, you'll get this. If you want to pay $1 a month, you're going to get our newsletter, The Big Daddy Dispatch, which is, they just think about it so well. Mm-hmm. They structure it out amazingly. And
well, they put work into it too. Like, I don't think that
they
you do. Should.
They put tons of hours. No, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not making it seem like it's easy.
Like, but like I'm Patreon saying that, like, is hard. If you want a successful Patreon campaign, fully. You have to put a ton of work into it. And
but they had 100,000 downloads. Yeah. You know, like before they had like 100,000 listeners before they started that Patreon. So obviously, if they just got 1,000 of them to jump on, I mean, that's what Amanda Palmer always said, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all you need is what is it? 1,000 fans that are willing to spend $100 on you a year, and you have $100,000. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Like once, and if you have these people are spending not $100 a year. Some of them are, if you're spending like, you know, the $10 a month tier.
Yeah. I just did some calculations to kind of see like maybe where they're at. Some Patreon creators will list how much they're making every month. They don't, mm-hmm. but they do list.
They do not anymore.
The number of patrons that they have. And mm-hmm. you can kind of guess, like, I bet most people are subscribing between the $3 and $5 tiers.
Yes, yeah, I would agree.
So I would say that they're between like $18,000 to $29,000 a month,
right? And which is between four hosts, yeah. Like amazing. So like, stand up and applaud for them, because like it's such a great demonstration of the power of podcasting, mm-hmm. and the reason why Luminary doesn't need to exist, because Trevor Noah can go and do his Patreon account if he wants. Like no, every, like these. Like the money must be more than $29,000 a month for Nick Van Der Kolk to run this thing. If yeah. he's really, cause I mean, I don't know what Love and Radio's numbers are.
It's gotta be like a record label sort of situation, like a quick payout. You get an advance or something to do the show.
Yeah.
That must be the right. appeal. Like Preet Bharara is a good parallel to Trevor Noah. You know, he's somebody steeped in, you know, the political nature of our country. And that's kind of like where he talks about stuff. Trevor Noah is also a comedian. He has that angle. But Preet Bharara has been able to make an entire living off of his podcast. And now he has like a new, it's basically Patreon. It's like a privately managed thing. But he has like a private feed for a separate podcast. So if you like what you're getting in the free feed, which is plenty for me, but you want to dig into more of it with Ann Milgram, who is another prosecutor, you can subscribe to his feed. And they have tons of subscribers. He must make a ton of money on that. It's a private thing. He just puts in the work, and it works totally fine. And I, you know, I subscribe to like two or three Patreons just for podcasts. I think it's a great model because you're paying specifically for the one thing you want, and you only have to pay as much as you want to. I'm seeing tip jars becoming a more prevalent thing. There are different podcast apps that will allow you to, you know, add tip jars or links to your Cash App or your PayPal or something. So if somebody really likes your show, they don't have mm-hmm. to pay for it, but they can tip you, which is nice. I don't think.
Does Breaker support that yet?
No, we have an integration with Patreon.
Yes. A lot, like Overcast does that as well.
Do they?
Yeah. I think Marco launched that event. Like there's like a little dollar sign or something that will pop up on.
That's on more podcast. Of like the tip jar thing.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it, like you can link it to a Patreon, which would be for like a separate feed probably. Because you're not going to link to your Patreon and your Patreon fee. That's kind of redundant. Nobody.
Yeah.
But no, we have like a Patreon thing where people can basically become patrons through Breaker. I don't think it's a perfect integration. Not, it's still
like
in beta.
It's like a referent. It's like a referral, but like Breaker doesn't get a cut of anything or like a referral bonus.
No, not for that. We do not for a very, very, very minuscule amount of money that we
just
make
just a redirect. Right.
Like we have Upstream, which is like a separate service where you can produce a show exclusively on Breaker. So it's basically Patreon, but on Breaker. But you can only listen to it on Breaker. That's the drawback, which is why we're exploring like the Patreon thing to see if that's like a model that people like more. And they're still both like very early, so it's hard to say where we're going to go on that. But
well, that rules.
Yeah. But no, I Nick just, he frustrates me. Like
Nick Van Der Kolk.
Yeah, it just has to be.
Radio.
It has to be a quick payout thing. Like, it's not a good long-term solution. And I know that he's been doing this for a long time. Maybe. Like, he knows, I guess he knows better than us. And he's been doing like the public radio sort of model for a long time. And maybe he thinks that Patreon is a little too close to that. And if he wasn't doing what he was looking to do through his former model, maybe he doesn't want to try Patreon. But I don't know. I think building an audience independent of a platform which could go away at any time is a much better route. Like, staying independent, if you can, is always going to be better for you monetarily. There's not going to be anybody taking a cut from you. Nobody is going to, you know, pull the rug out from under you and, you know, uproot your whole campaign. Like, I think Patreon is in a better position to stick around for a while than Luminary is. If Luminary disappears, okay. Maybe Nick lost some fans moving to Luminary. But if Luminary goes away, all of those people that he had paying him there, and all maybe the new people that picked up because they were already paying for something else on Luminary and checked him out and thought, hey, this is a cool show. If Luminary goes away, those people all have to go independently find him somewhere else. Like, there's no 301 redirect if Luminary just dies. Like, they're going to sell that URL to somebody else so they can pay back investors, and that's going to be the end of that. Maybe Patreon's not the right method for him either, but I don't know.
In an ideal world, there wouldn't need to be Patreon existing because the benefit of Patreon is just that it exists and it's a platform that you can use and integrate. And it's got a lot of great tools for you. And you've got Jack Conti, who is just so dedicated to creators and a great musician to boot. it's great to have him just a visionary kind of just steering this company. In an ideal world, these podcasters could just, you know, set up a tip jar, like a digital tip jar, like a PayPal account or whatever, and just, you know, not have such a huge cut being taken. I don't think it's a huge cut being taken by Patreon, but it's something, you know, it's substantial. Mm-hmm. They'd have a big chunk of change if they didn't. It's like music, you know, like, did you link me to Cash Music that time, a long time ago? That service called Cash Music?
Oh, like the Bitcoin driven thing?
No, it was, I don't remember the name of the person who founded it, but essentially it was a way, it was like Bandcamp. I'm trying to find a link to it. Here it is. I'm sending you the thing right now. Maybe it's not real. No, this is it. Here it is. Yeah. I'm sending it to you now. Oh, no, that's not you.
I did that last week.
Yeah, I know. Join the Cash family. So it's basically just like now they're charging for it. It looks like I already have like an old best friend name here. But if you log in, essentially it's just like building your own little platform and you essentially use your Google Drive as your hosting.
Oh.
And so like people can just pay you for your album. Bandcamp is not taking a cut from this. Like, they're just downloading from your Google Drive. They can get art, merch. Like, it's such a cool thing that existed. And it looks like it's changed now. It looks like they're charging monthly for some stuff. But I signed up early on back in like 2016, it looks like. And yeah, it's cool that it exists.
Yeah, this looks interesting.
Yeah, it's just a way. It's another attempt at a platform for musicians. It's not like Bandcamp just became such a easy way to do it, and for such a like nominal fee, like 15%, I think 10% Bandcamp's taking.
Yeah,
so that's cool. Like,
Bandcamp is fantastic. One of my all-time favorite services ever created.
Yeah.
It's just so nice. And did you see what they're doing now? I thought this might be interesting for you.
What is it?
They are producing vinyl now. You can have your record printed on vinyl through Bandcamp.
I wonder how many people will just do that blindly and not realize that you have to remaster your album and remix it.
Yeah, but I don't know. There are other similar services to it now. I think a lot of people that are buying vinyl aren't looking really for the vinyl experience.
You're right. No, I mean, but like, what about the packaging and stuff? Like, who designs the packaging?
Yeah.
Like, do you have to send them art and everything?
These are all good
questions. I'll look into it. But yeah, I mean, I would want to remaster for vinyl if I was going to do it, because it has to be mono, doesn't it? Or am I just, I don't know how it works. I'm not a vinyl guy, Jake.
I know people you could ask. I don't know though.
I mean, I do too. My producer for one, but
yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. On a side note, not maybe a semi side note, and maybe a good place to end on is, Not Nick Kwa is back.
Mm. I did see that. So,
but yeah, so it's been a week or two since we talked about Not Nick Kwa.
And at that point, he had disappeared. And I think actually later that afternoon, you're like, oh no, he's back.
Yeah. It was like that. We had talked about it. And then I think that evening in bed, I was like, oh shit, he lives. Like, because we talked about, I think on the show, we talked about his RIP that happened. Like he basically, they'd given like a moratorium on Not Nick Kwa. Not Nick Kwa is as it describes, it's a Twitter account that is Not Nick Kwa. The, what is it? The pod news that he, that Nick Kwa does? Hot Pod. Okay. Not the pod news. Yeah, he does a really long newsletter about podcasts, and somebody just made something called Not Nick Kwa, and they're just making really quippy, engaging with a bunch of, podcast personalities, you know, just ripping on Serial season 2 for some reason. I don't really know what the joke is there, but I can't tell if they like it or they hate it, but I liked it. So I'm going to choose to believe that Not Nick Kwa doesn't like it, but their identity was about to be compromised. We had hypothesized that it was Jorge Just, because they said, I am Jorge Just when they were about to be outed. turns out they said, we are not Jorge Just shortly after they came back to life on Twitter. And then today's development. You
I'm reading it right
today.
Now. So, yeah. Okay, he's back, and now he's not back.
I don't know that it's he either. I'll continue to use they as their pronoun. But my favorite gag they do is they post a group picture of a bunch of podcasters at like a festival or like a dinner or something like that, and they're just like, "What a great time we all had!" And you're just like, "Wait, who is it?" And they're just messing, because I think it's a different set of people in each photo, but like, they're just messing with everybody.
Yeah.
But I do love what's going on today, which sort of deteeths them a little bit, I think. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I'm reading a thread. Is this the, like, the last thing that they posted?
Yes, it's, where is it? Did they change their name? No, that's just Nick Kwa. T-Lizard. Not
underscore Nick Kwa.
Not underscore Nick Kwa. So today, basically, something they texted. Well, there's been times in Not Nick Kwa's life on Twitter, where they post screenshots of them texting famous podcasters. Like the only one I knew that I recognized was Dallas from 20,000 Hertz, which we can talk about a different time, that podcast. But it's just basically just texting people and being creepy. And they had to clarify today, Not Nick Kwa had to clarify today, that it is not like, they're not doing it to be creepy. They genuinely like these people. They're not just ripping on them. And I think they deleted a couple tweets today, because I wasn't able to find them after I looked back on my thing. Oh, wrong one. Okay. I'm just trying to find this thread here. Oh, they're just called Feedback, aren't they?
What?
Their Twitter feed is called Feedback.
I think it changed.
Oh, it changed just to Nick now?
It's like Nick crossed out with the play button.
I see.
It's changed a couple times.
Yeah, it was Feedback for a while. And then today their thread is like talking about how they never meant to make fun of Nick Kwa. They generally like, here it is. I'll read it out loud. So it's a thread. It says, I like Nick Kwa. I never intended anything nearing making fun of him. It's just a funny name that started as just a Twitter handle for Feedback, but since people started using it, ran with it. Nick is the most popular guy in podcasting. He brings a metric ton of value. this text was due to a legitimate tip that someone said was not. Oh, then he's there. Then they just started posting the text that they sent out. I think they deleted something, but they said, sorry to anyone who felt creeped out. I hate that that happened. I hate it so much. I'm sorry. So it just sort of de-teethed the whole thing to me, defanged it, because I did like how, maybe not like how edgelord they were, but like how much they ever, like, I like the trolley aspect of it almost. Like, it's fine.
Mm.
You know, like, this person was not happy. The replier on this thread says, you're being a jerk. If you never intended to make fun of him, really wanted to clear the air, delete your account. And then it's got a few likes.
Well, she's a producer at This American Life.
Lena, yep. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it.
I don't have any strong feelings. I mean, if it's bothering the people that they're like talking about, I guess, you know, if it's like messing with Nick Kwa and his ability to be like a critical voice in podcasting, I'm not like a big fan of that, because I like Nick Kwa and I think that he has really good takes on things. I don't think he over sensationalizes stuff. He puts a lot of thought into the things that he writes about the podcasting industry, and I value that. And I don't know. If this is in any way like making him doubt his role or impact, you know, because sometimes if somebody parodies you, it's not, people say, you know, mimicry is like a form of flattery. I don't think that's true. I think it can be harmful. It's like they don't take you seriously enough to.
Well, what do you define mimicry? Because in this case, it's like. They're not mimicking. They're not pretending that they are Nick Kwa.
Yeah, but their name is Nick Kwa. Like they could have made their Twitter handle, like podcast critic. It could have been something.
Yeah, that was that
totally.
That is the truth.
Unrelated, but they're using his name as, whether it was their original intention or not. They, as they say, ran with it, and I don't know. I think if the people that they're teasing, don't appreciate it or don't feel like they're being included in on the joke, then I don't think it's in good taste, but I don't know. I also don't follow this account, so I'm not
well,
seeing
also,
their jokes.
I also don't know. I don't know what this thread is about. Like, they clearly deleted a tweet that this is referring to. Like, they say this text was due to a legitimate tip someone said was not followed up upon by other outlets, so wanted to corroborate before posting anything, and that was the way the person said to get in contact with that person. So yeah, I mean, like, I guess Nick Kwa has just like texted people before. Not Nick Kwa has texted people before in term and like to make a good tweet or something like that. Like with Dallas, they said in the thread that has now been deleted, I believe, they said that they reached out to Dallas. They like were DMing with Dallas and was like, hey, can I text you? Like, and they were like, okay. So like the screenshot that ended up on Twitter, which might still be up, is just like Nick Kwa being like, hello, so-and-so, with like a picture of themselves, like their avatar. And then Dallas is just like, oh, you? Like, and apparently that was set up. But I think it's funny. I don't know. Maybe I'm not seeing the harm that it is, but I like parody accounts. I think Twitter is a place for jokes. And when it's not for jokes, it's for communication during social unrest.
When was this account created? Because they have 1,000 tweets.
Oh, it was created recently. We saw the birth of it. I think, yeah, it's like their first tweet was probably, I want to say March.
That means somebody is like really into what they're doing.
They do a lot of replies to people.
I mean, it's not all bad. The one where it's like Disney Plus is $1 cheaper than Luminary is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
I think it's funny if you
they're picking on somebody that I don't like.
Well, there's some funny stuff also in their their engagement like metrics. Like they have we had like 300 engagements, but not one single like or retweet. It just shows you how scared everybody is, you know, reading this, like, to engage, because they don't want to like be seen, because they know that this account is so polarizing, and they know that, like, if one person likes a tweet who's not like the rest of their I don't know, podcasting network may disapprove of that. You know, it's like,
right.
It's a weirdly polarizing account.
It and is interesting.
I think
if you look, yeah, like they posted a picture of Castbox blocking them on Twitter, but they have engagements with, like, back and forth with Himalaya. So it's like, okay. Oh yeah, it was even a reaction. They say that that Castbox blocked him, and then that started a conversation with whoever runs the Himalaya account. I guess you know, it's kind of funny. Like, I don't know. It's fine. These accounts have existed in all sorts of industries. There used to be really good ones in the alternative music industry. Like there was like Anonymous Band Dude. There was the merch guy. They're all just people who worked in the industry and wanted to poke fun of it while, you know, dealing with the stuff they have to deal with on a daily basis. And there's some fun to that, but it's different when you target somebody so directly.
Yeah. I guess I must have missed, and I still am missing the actual offensiveness of this. Besides, I understand that Nick Kwa's name is in it. So yeah, I mean, like, it would probably be in better taste to not use not Nick Kwa. Maybe they just can't think of anything clever enough.
Just change the handle to anything.
Like to podcast critic or whatever. You know, like, yeah, just something. That makes sense. Yeah. I think it just, like, not Nick Kwa is so funny, though.
Podcast critic is taken, though, so you're going to have to find something else.
Yeah, I mean, there's infinite solutions, but yeah.
You can use an underscore.
I would have chosen Sarah Koenig. Not Sarah Koenig.
That's funny.
Or just call it Serial Season 2. Like, because that's clear their obsession is Serial Season 2. And I think it would be funny just to just call it Serial Season 2. Like, there's so many ways that you can write that out. You could like use numeral 2. You can use something cereal. Else.
As in the breakfast. Siri, although I'm not talking to you.
Oh, God, Siri. God damn it.
It just asked, did you accidentally summon me? If you think I summoned you, then
you
why
know.
Are you talking to me?
My God.
Oh, I hate Siri.
She gets
so
sassier
much.
And sassier every day.
I have it set to heat, but I thought I had it turned off, but I did reset a bunch of stuff when you told me to. And
mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, no, it's over for you. I have, I set my HomePod to Irish, female Irish voice.
Nice.
And
that's awesome.
It's so good. It's like having Friday from the Iron Man suit. It's great. Speaking of that, I'm waking up at 7 a.m. tomorrow to go see the premiere of Endgame, or not the premiere, but to see Endgame.
Oh, yeah, that comes out tonight, doesn't it?
Yeah, it came out at 6 o'clock tonight, so I have to actually get off Twitter before I ruin everything.
Don't spoil the Endgame.